Somebody called me Sarah, Mr. Speaker. I might seek your leave in requiring protection and asking for protection from them. I don't know why. Mr. Speaker, let me start by thanking the people of Castries Central for manifesting their trust and confidence in me and giving me the necessary mandate so I could be here to be their voice. A voice that will undoubtedly speak out to echo the cry of a neglected and deprived people. I wish also to thank the Almighty God for granting me not only the opportunity to be here, but providing me with a collapse, Mr. Speaker, which is inundated with resistance, resilience, fortitude, courage, and perseverance, so that my quest for ensuring equality in this country cannot be easily derailed by my detractors, whose attempts have been and will continue to be exercises in futility. Mr. Speaker, let me get straight into the business of the day. But before I do so, let me add that I do not oppose for opposing's sake. I believe everyone in this honorable house have good intention. Against this background, Mr. Speaker, I will expect where there is constructive criticism, such criticism will be embraced so as to make the relevant adjustments which will ultimately impact on the designed beneficiaries, the people of St. Lucia. Mr. Speaker, I went through the budget with a fine-tooth comb. And I'll summarize it by saying, Mr. Speaker, it's frightening. Yes, it is, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, our total recurring expenditure, our total recurring revenue, is $621,626,399. However, our total recurring expenditure is $760,015. Now, for those who don't really understand, recurring revenue is the amount you make every month. Your salary or what you expect to earn. Recurring expenses, however, let be your monthly commitments, those you are bound to meet, and for those persons in the household, that will be your light bill, your telephone bill, your electricity bill. In relation to recurring expenditure for government, it means the salaries to police officers, to firemen, to the police, to civil servants, and other government employees. It has absolutely nothing to do, Mr. Speaker, with the embarkation on any new project. Recurring expenditure has nothing to do. Recurring, it's the same. It's a matter of semantics. Very well. It is the amount of money, Mr. Speaker, that you spend per month. If you put it on a monthly basis. It has absolutely nothing, as I said, it has nothing to do with the development of new projects. And cannot lead, recurring expenditure cannot lead to infrastructural development. This is money, Mr. Speaker, that you need to spend to stay alive. That's money you're bound to spend to stay alive. Now, Mr. Speaker, our expenditure, exceeds our revenue by $78,433,616 for 1 year. If we divide that by 12, Mr. Speaker, the monthly amount is over $6.5 million. That in effect means, Mr. Speaker, that for St. Lucia to survive, it must borrow $6.5 million every month. $6.5 million must be borrowed just to survive. We are not even talking about capital projects yet. We are dealing with survival. Mr. Speaker, let me explain that to St. Lucia, you might not probably understand. If you make $100 a month, but your telephone, your light bill, and your water bill is $140, to stay alive, to survive, you have to borrow $40 monthly. The ideal situation would have been, Mr. Speaker, that you make 100, you spend 60, you save 40, and as and when you need something like a fridge, you could go into your accumulated income, your savings, and buy whatever you want from there. But Mr. Speaker, if you are borrowing to survive, you must borrow for capital. And that is what this budget is about. We have to borrow $6.5 million every month to stay afloat. Mr. Speaker, if you do that, if the African solution does that, the neighbor will say, who can make puncha kuku pasakwai? You are hanging your hat where you cannot reach it because you are spending more than you're making. And in fact, that's what it is. But Mr. Speaker, when a country, Mr. Speaker, cannot sustain itself and has to survive on borrowed funds, the country is in trouble. There is no doubt about that. And I don't care what statistics you use to disguise that. It is a fact that we are in trouble because to survive we need $6.5 million a month. Mr. Speaker, it is very interesting to note that in 1995-96, we had a surplus of almost $50 million. To be exact, Mr. Speaker, it was $49,466,098. A surplus, revenue minus expenses. Today, Mr. Speaker, we are operating in the red by $78 million, causing us to go and borrow $6.5 million a month. Mr. Speaker, that surplus figure began decreasing from 1997. It embarked on a decrease almost instantaneously with the assumption of office of the St. Lucia Labour Party. In 2003, it went down to $19,682,000. In 2004, there was no excess. So the excess started here, Mr. Speaker, at $50 million when they took office. It went down to zero, and then we have to start borrowing to survive. It is frightening, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, we need to ask, when will this borrowing stop? When will St. Lucia return to a position where at least it can take care of its recurring expenditure with its recurring revenue? When? Now, Mr. Speaker, we need to ask ourselves, what has caused that? What has caused us to be spending more money than we make? I'll tell you, Mr. Speaker, I'll tell you, the creation of top jobs. That is what has caused it, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, in the civil service, the three highest grades are 19, 20, and 21. In 1995-96, in grade 21, there were 3%. In grade 20, there were 15. In grade 19, there were 15. Today, Mr. Speaker, in grade 21, there are 5, 2 more. In grade 20, there are 28. And in grade 19, there are 36. 36! the amount has more than doubled in grade 19, almost doubled in grade 20, and almost doubled in grade 21. So doesn't that have an impact on our recurring expenditure? It must have! It must have, Mr. Speaker! And that's why the money's going out every month. That's why we need to borrow $6.5 million just to stay alive. So, Mr. Speaker, unless and until we can cause a surplus to be created, or at least, Mr. Speaker, our recurring expenses should not be totally consumed by our recurring revenue, we are in trouble. We are in trouble, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, we are in trouble. Mr. Speaker, we have about $1 billion budget. $1 billion budget, Mr. Speaker. It's just a narrow budget. It's just an amount of money. If the money is yours, I understand. But every day, Mr. Speaker, I sit here, I see resolutions one after the other. That the Minister of Finance, hold on, I saw it yesterday, I saw it today, they have been coming to me. That ever since I've been a member of this House, Mr. Speaker, I have been receiving resolutions one after the other to permit the Minister of Finance to borrow money. Mr. Speaker, the budget is $1 billion budget. But, Mr. Speaker, when one third of your budget is borrowed money, is there anything to be proud of? Is there anything to be proud of? It would have been a $10 billion budget if CDBs would have done this year. So, Mr. Speaker, I really cannot fathom the pride attached to the budget being $1 billion budget when it's borrowed, we are going to borrow money. Mr. Speaker, there is absolutely no doubt that prices of goods and services, especially goods, Mr. Speaker, have risen astronomically in the past few years. When the economic reviews were done, Mr. Speaker, and I have them right here with me, they blame everything for the rises, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, at page 19 of the economic review, for 2003, it says the resurgence of economic growth 2003 was accompanied by an upward movement in the general price level. In the yearly review, the inflation rate, as measured by the 12-month moving average of the consumer price index, firmed 1% in contrast to last year's 4.2%. This was primarily due to the external factors, including the hikes in oil throughout the year and inflation in St. Lucia's main trading part of the country. In the year review, CPI, the Consumer Price Index, shifted upwards to 171.8 from 170.1. The change in the overall CPI is largely explained by the heavily weighted food index. Prices of food advanced by 2.1%. Food alone, which is a basic necessity. Mr. Speaker, economic review for 2004. Higher international oil prices and buoyant aggregate demand can work together to create inflationary pressures. The food sub-index, the most heavily weighted expenditure item in the CPI, increased by 0.8% compared to 2.1 in the same period a year ago and contributed most to the level of inflation in 2004. Oil again is being blamed. Oil. In this review, Mr. Speaker, 2005, Mr. Speaker, I read the inflation rate in 2005 was higher, 17, was higher than in the previous year, as the persistent rise in the international prices continued to drive up the consumer price index. Mr. Speaker, It says oil is being blamed for everything. Oil is being blamed for everything. Mr. Speaker, food. Food. Food, the price of food is the main contributor to the inflation increase. If this continues, Mr. Speaker, just like St. Lucia cannot sustain itself, we will be able to, unable to feed ourselves. And what is amazing, Mr. Speaker, that there is no place in the economic reviews that reference is made to a monopoly being the direct result or impacting on increased prices. It is a fact, Mr. Speaker, that if one person, one company, one establishment, one institution controls the supply of a commodity, he, she, or it can dictate the price. Mr. Speaker, I'll give you an example. When Carolyn Wireless enjoyed a monopoly in St. Lucia, as far as telecommunications, mobile systems were concerned, Mr. Speaker, when they control that monopoly, we did not even want to give anybody else our cell number. You know why, Mr. Speaker? We paid to make calls, we paid to receive calls, we paid for every other facility that was available with the telephone. From March, Mr. Speaker, 2003, since digital came to our shores, Mr. Speaker, every Tom, Dick and Harry had a phone. And nobody, Mr. Speaker, nobody is afraid to give anybody else a telephone number. Competition benefits the consumer, Mr. Speaker, and it's a fact. Mr. Speaker, for long, Mr. Speaker, those establishments that enjoy the monopoly are almost insulated from competition. But Mr. Speaker, it is the intention, Mr. Speaker, of our government, when we assume office, not if when, to ensure that competition is encouraged in every facet of this society. Mr. Speaker, another basic necessity apart from food is water. We constantly hear you saying, water is life. Yes, water is life. So when you privatize the water, you privatize the life of solution. Water is life, but you privatize water. So then now you privatize our life. And you know what, Mr. Speaker? You know what, Mr. Speaker? The price of water increased 100-fold. By 100%, sorry. The price of water increased by 100%. And then you tell me you care about Maliways. I wonder, Mr. Speaker, whether we will blame the hike in oil prices for the increment in the price of water in this country. I wonder, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, it is the responsibility of the government of the day to ensure that every citizen can meet his basic needs. And that government must put mechanisms in place to ensure that those basic needs are met. But when the price of water increases by 100% and the price of food keeps rising every day, you need to ask ourselves, Mr. Speaker, whether the government of the day cares for the people of St. Lucia. Mr. Speaker, right there on Chaussee Road, I walked there during the by-election. 20 feet inward, I used to live on Chaussee Road, Mr. Speaker. I'm not a stranger. I am no stranger to the city, Mr. Speaker. I was born there. I live there. Very well, Mr. Speaker. And less than 20 feet from Chaussee Road and Main Street in Catrice, there was no potable water. I could not believe it, Mr. Speaker. After 9 years, 20 years from Chaussee Road, that would be 20 feet, Mr. Speaker, from Chaussee Road, there is no water. You know, Mr. Speaker, some residents of Bernard Hill informed me that they had to illegally run a pipe from the back of government buildings so that they could get a supply, water, potable water supply there. Mr. Speaker, right behind government buildings, there is no pipe-borne water. No pipe-borne water, Mr. Speaker. We need to ask ourselves whether, Mr. Speaker, we need to go back to the good old days, as the Governor General said, those days were better. And they are returning, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, agriculture, especially the cultivation of bananas, is very close to my heart, Mr. Speaker. Bananas, the production of bananas, Mr. Speaker, is very close to my heart. Reason being, Mr. Speaker, when I went to university, I was devoid of a scholarship. My mother told me, in those days they used to call bananas green gold. My mother said to me, Tibuanale, signe l'aja, me gai pay lwe a yuma outu li moi. And so I left there, Mr. Speaker. I left there in full confidence that the banana industry could have provided with enough money, Mr. Speaker, to see my way through university. Mr. Speaker, the statistics are there. In 1996, Mr. Speaker, the country exported 120,000 tons of bananas. The returns were $125,780,000. In 2003, Mr. Speaker, in the Economic Review, and I'll tell you what they say. They said, Mr. Speaker, during 2003, banana exports fell by 29.5% to 33,907 tons, the lowest level of export in 10 years. That was 2003. However, Mr. Speaker, that was in 2003. Mr. Speaker, let me just tell you what happened in 2005. Mr. Speaker, in 2005, Mr. Speaker, banana exports from St. Lucia fell again by 29.1% to 30,000 tons. So, Mr. Speaker, we have moved from 120,000 tons in 1996 to 30,000 tons in the year 2005. Now, Mr. Speaker, you know the amazing thing? Hurricanes are blamed left, right, and center. And stop hurricanes started in 1997. Never. Hurricanes started from time immemorial. Hurricanes didn't start in 1997. Mr. Speaker, in the year 1982, Mr. Speaker, we had Hurricane Allen. Less than 6 months after the passage of that devastating hurricane, production was back to normal. In 1992, Mr. Speaker, we had Hurricane Debbie. 1994, sorry, we had the Hurricane Debbie. Within 6 months, Mr. Speaker, the banana production was almost normal. Mr. Speaker, in 1993, we had not a natural disaster this time, we had a man-made disaster that literally saw the assumption of office by the Solution of the Party. We had to know. 1993, we had the locust strike. Farmers strike left, right, and center. They burned down fields, Mr. Speaker. But that did not touch, Mr. Speaker. It did not touch the amount of bananas that we produced. So, Mr. Speaker, before 1997, the bananas could have withstood man-made disasters by local strikes and flooding. It could have withstood natural disasters with the hurricane. The only disaster that bananas can withstand is our nuclear disaster that happened in 1997. 1997, a political disaster. So, Mr. Speaker, I don't understand how persons could tell me that they from, even if, Mr. Speaker, if you almost kill an industry, it is incumbent upon you knowing full well that that industry was the backbone of the economy. It is incumbent upon you, Mr. Speaker, to attempt to revive it. So that if $107 million spent on bananas in 9 years is what bananas would have brought in any given year. It would have brought that in any given year, Mr. Speaker. So, Mr. Speaker, we can safely say that the Labour administration has killed the banana industry by almost 80%. Mr. Speaker, the other point, what has become of all those people who are employed in the banana industry? What has become of those people? And Mr. Speaker, I could dare say that when bananas are burning, Catchy Central was the greatest recipient of monies directly from the banana industry. Because when the farmers came to Catchy's, Mr. Speaker, the first place they spent the money was in Catchy Central. Mr. Speaker, the people who were employed in the banana industry, having lost their employment, either have no choice but to migrate. Some are still unemployed, and some turn to minimum striving. Now the minimum striving thing, Mr. Speaker, is another story by itself, and I will speak on that in a while. Mr. Speaker, there is absolutely no doubt that that industry has been sidelined in the name of tourism. But the question I ask is, how many people from Bardini, Forestier, Bexor, Marode, Rila, Brie, Debawa, Olio, Opico can earn a livelihood from tourism? Mr. Speaker, tourism has to be sensitive to the government because the economy stood on three legs at one time, manufacturing, tourism and agriculture. But right now, Mr. Speaker, it stands almost solely on tourism. Manufacturing, Mr. Speaker, has taken a beating. We have had several factories, Mr. Speaker, that are closed and closed, and the people are still unemployed. What is, Mr. Speaker, Bell Fashion, Majestic, Catchy's Apparel, all of them are closed, Mr. Speaker, and they have not been offered alternative employment. So, Mr. Speaker, there is an urgent desire on the part of the government to set back the gemstone of the economy, which is tourism. Mr. Speaker, that is why we lose all our land in the name of tourism. We lose our beaches in the name of tourism. We are hit by hotels, Mr. Speaker, in the name of tourism. Our homes are searched in the name of tourism, Mr. Speaker. And as far as I see it, Mr. Speaker, in relation to this government, tourism is the next best thing to God, so let's protect it. Mr. Speaker, agriculture needs. Mr. Speaker, I have a right to always survive in this country, Mr. Speaker. I can survive in this country as well, Mr. Speaker.
I know when my member for Castle Central begins to suffer, he needs some protection.
Mr. Speaker! Yes, I derive money from tourism. I was born here, I live there, and hopefully we'll die here, Mr. Speaker. Foreigners come from everywhere. one can grant concession, can be granted concession. Why can't I be at the son of the planet? Mr. Speaker, agriculture needs to reoccupy the vital role which it plays. And all that tourism, all the produce for local consumption, Mr. Speaker, all of the produce are imported. And diversification, Mr. Speaker, is not encouraged. The other thing is, Mr. Speaker, the income derived from bananas could have taken care of the road leading to the banana farms today, Mr. Speaker. The roads leading to banana farms are not given priority because we don't make money from bananas. So leave the roads alone. But the banana income could have taken care, Mr. Speaker, of those roads. You see, Mr. Speaker, there is an offense called treason. It is an offense against the state. It is more serious in nature than murder. I will dare say, Mr. Speaker, that it was treason to privatize the banana industry. That is what killed it. That's the arrogance, Mr. Speaker. Take me to court. That's the arrogance, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, no government ought to take a hands-on approach to the central nervous system of its economy. You cannot develop the family attitude to the industry which has been responsible for both the economic and infrastructural development. When there was all that money coming into the country from bananas, Mr. Speaker, there was no need to borrow all those vast sums of money. Mr. Speaker, the national debt in 1997 was $400 million. When this budget is passed, Mr. Speaker, it will almost reach to $1 billion. $2,000 million. 5 times the amount it was when the administration assumed office, Mr. Speaker. My good God, when will we stop paying, Mr. Speaker? You know, solutions now. If you buy a car, you go to the bank, you take a loan to buy a car. You can't pay the loan, so you can't say, you will go back. Well, you can't pay the loan, you can't pay the loan. I fuck more debt. We are in a lot of debt, Mr. Speaker. Build your house. Mr. Speaker, I will undertake to build the country out when I get the solution of the party government out. I undertake to do that, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, one of the ramifications of the decline in the banana industry was unemployment, as I said, Mr. Speaker. And I also indicated, Mr. Speaker, that some of the persons employed in the banana industry having lost the opportunity of gainful employment resorted to minimum striving. Mr. Speaker, you will not believe that the government conducted a feasibility study to examine the possibility of getting rid of some of our local bus drivers in favor of a foreign company. Mr. Speaker, I have the evidence here, Mr. Speaker, to which I will allude, Mr. Speaker. I will make a document of the House as my friend has requested. Mr. Speaker, Mr. Speaker, it says there, improvements to the public transport system. It is right here, Mr. Speaker. The first one is existing bus licenses will need to be taken out of service. If I cannot read, I want one person from the Labour Party to read it for me. If I cannot read, I need somebody to read it for me. Mr. Speaker, that is what the feasibility study said. I did not do the feasibility study. It was conducted not by me, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, this is the report. This is the report. The report says, Mr. Speaker, the consultants will have a group joint venture in association with another company, Architects and Planners. It says, the consultants have prepared this report in accordance with the instructions of the client. Who was the client? Government of St. Lucia. At page A9, Mr. Speaker, at page A9, it says, Mr. Speaker, an alternative way forward to developing the terminal for the present persistent is to consider the viability of introducing a scheduled bus service implemented by a central bus company. I did not do this, Mr. Speaker. It goes on to say, the transition from the present situation to that of a scheduled bus service needs to be planned carefully. The compensation packages need to be considered for the existing bus drivers that will no longer be in the industry. In other words, get them out. Go on, Mr. Speaker. The transition. That is, Mr. Speaker. You must pay for it. Never. Mr. Speaker, it goes on to say, the levels of return from a bus company are not potentially attractive for private investment unless there is some counterpart subsidy, another subsidy from the government. A policy decision on implementing a subsidized transportation system is required. Introducing a tax on the sale of diesel and petrol can finance the subsidy. Mr. Speaker, it's in black and white. I did not do the study. I did not prepare the report. It was prepared at the instance and instruction of the government of St. Lucia, who had to take all the drivers from the road, bring in a company from Madrid, Mr. Speaker, bring in a company from Madrid, and in so doing, Mr. Speaker, put another tax on us, Mr. Speaker, and they will not pay it up. But you know what, Mr. Speaker? You know what happened, Mr. Speaker? When the government realized that I show that I am away, persons will revolt. By cabinet conclusion number 24 of 2006, it says, cabinet considered the memorandum, and number 3 says, rejected the recommendation for a scheduled centralized bus system. So the very moment that spent the tax, taxpayers money, Mr. Speaker, to conduct a feasibility study, went to cabinet and says, no, we are rejecting it. Why spend taxpayers money on it, Mr. Speaker? Why spend taxpayers money on it? That is what I want to know, Mr. Speaker. And it shows an intention, Mr. Speaker, to get the workers out of employment. That is the intention. That intention it shows, Mr. Speaker. I listened to the contributions of several members here, and I understood, Mr. Speaker, and the budget promises that universal secondary education for all. Now, you know, Mr. Speaker, yesterday I heard somebody say an additional 10 minutes more. Mr. Philip Jerry said in the house an additional 10 minutes more. Oh my God. Ask Mr. Michel, will tell you he told me you that. Mr. Speaker, the BM said that education is the key to get persons out of poverty. I agree with that. I agree with that, Mr. Speaker. Whatever I quoted, he said, I agree with that 100%. But Mr. Speaker, I want to outline a few instances which I want you to judge and for you to tell me whether a person who preaches that education is the key, whether they act constitute, I mean, are in concurrence with what he says. Mr. Speaker, let me first say that the government boasts of building 5 secondary schools. Yes, they built 5 secondary schools, but as Mr. the member for UFOS not agreed, 4 of the schools, Mr. Speaker, the sites have been located, the plans were drawn, everything was in place. All government of the day was to sort a contractor. The only school, Mr. Speaker, which is the brainchild of the government of the day is the Cicero Secondary School. The Cicero Secondary School. So, Mr. Speaker, I understand that development is a continuing process. I lay upon our administration with fantastic ideas. All you have to do is just smash those ideas and implement them. That's all. And that is what happened, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the same administration that preaches universal secondary education and stresses on the importance of education withdrew a subsidy that the students in Cuba enjoyed. The same administration withdrew a subsidy that the girls' vocational school used to enjoy, Mr. Speaker, causing the girls' vocational school to shut down. Mr. Speaker, they withdrew a stipend that have been paid to teachers, that have been paid to teachers at training college. And I told you, Mr. Speaker, not only did they force teachers to leave the profession, but they compromised the quality of education in some of our schools. This same administration, Mr. Speaker, withdrew the study with full pay. This same administration withdrew the transportation allowance for students. The same administration privatized this St. Lucia Development Plan, which was a development out of this country, where you could have brought the students loan for next to nothing in terms of interest. Right now, Mr. Speaker, to get a student loan, you need to face a commercial bank. And your interest rate is as high as though you've taken a mortgage or buying a motor car. And you tell me that you care about education. My God. Mr. Speaker, all of those withdrawals, that is the only government that withdraws things it never puts. You know when you put money in the bank, Mr. Speaker, you go and withdraw. They have withdrawn everything which it never put. All of those mechanisms, Mr. Speaker, assisted, Mr. Speaker, assisted in ensuring that there was education for all. And none of those provisions, Mr. Speaker, none of those provisions was placed there by the current administration. Mr. Speaker, let me just touch on tourism. I mentioned tourism earlier on. And
the honourable member has 15 minutes remaining to make his contribution.
No, when it's closer to you, when I have 5 minutes, Mr. Speaker, you let me know. Mr. Speaker, no, the 5 minutes after how much time I want. Thank you very much. And he's quick to reveal that he gave me incentive on both and I this and that and the other. It doesn't matter, anyway.
I'm going to make a cast this as well. We will kindly address the chair. Another member of Castry Central, would you kindly address the chair and not argue?
Yes, Mr. Speaker, I have it in that, Mr. Speaker. But Mr. Speaker, it appears that incentives in this country are designed for everyone but locals. So that when an incentive is granted to a local, Mr. Speaker, it appears to be a favor. Mr. Speaker, With all the stress on tourism, Mr. Speaker, we need to ask ourselves how much money earned from tourism stays here. A very, very small percentage. And this is what happens, Mr. Speaker, when most of the hotels are foreign owned. To feel the impact of money on your economy, Mr. Speaker, the money must stay and be spent here. Unlike the tourist dollar, Mr. Speaker, the banana dollar has, or probably the little less still has, the domino effect. When farmers have money, Mr. Speaker, everyone smiles. They'll buy a bear, a fish, a pickup and chase you. The money will go around. The tourist dollar, Mr. Speaker, has a heavy concentration in foreign hands. Mr. Speaker, when all the inclusive vacations are paid for in Europe, Canada, or America, this money does not impact fully on our economy. It's like getting the crumbs off the table, Mr. Speaker, while the master eats, you get the crumbs. That is what happens. Mr. Speaker, Cartier Central is the pivot from which tourist activity revolves. Yet, we have a market that is so hot, not even fans, Mr. Speaker. And I heard the Honorable Prime Minister refer to the market as something of the Labour Party. What is it? I can't quite recall. The University of the Labour Party. But Mr. Speaker, it's a shame that the locals have to endure 8 hours of heat. Tourists can hardly stay there for 5 minutes, they walk out. The locals are forced to stay there in an effort at making an honest dollar. And Mr. Speaker, our locals are expected to tolerate that. The vendors in the arcade, Mr. Speaker, they carry their goods into the arcade every morning and have to remove their goods every evening, Mr. Speaker. Every morning and every evening, Mr. Speaker. No, absolutely no facilities are in place to at least lock their merchandise on a daily basis. For a tourist dollar to change exchange, Mr. Speaker, both the tourist and the vendor must be comfortable. Mr. Speaker, the number of homeless people sleeping under the market is an eyesore. And it is not characteristic of a capital city which depends so heavily on tourism. Our sidewalks are not, Mr. The Honorable Prime Minister, consider that. Our sidewalks, streets, rampants on, are in a state of disrepair, in a deplorable condition. Our gutters, both large and small, are a dumping ground for garbage. So that is exacerbating our rat problem, Mr. Speaker. Loads of rats. Mr. Speaker, we need to make that. We don't have a Minister of Health. We need to make the city, Mr. Speaker, look clean and attractive, Mr. Speaker, and one which feels comfortable. Mr. Speaker, on the 17th of December 1997, the government of St. Lucia, through the Prime Minister, signed an agreement. It is called the Rochelle Agreement. Mr. Speaker, I look at this agreement and I must say it is a sad day for St. Lucia, Mr. Speaker. It was a sad day. The effect of that agreement was recently felt. But that day was a sad day in St. Lucia, Mr. Speaker. The Honorable Prime Minister signed an agreement on behalf of the government with Rochelle Development Company Limited, Bishop Point Hotel Limited, Hyatt Hotel Limited, and Rochelle Construction Company Limited. Mr. Speaker, let me just read two paragraphs for this. The developer and government agreed that the developer may acquire 35 acres of land dismembered from the Causeway Lands at Rodney Bay for the purpose of creating a safe tourist development. The developer, that is well, Mr. Speaker, that is what is interesting. The developer was Rochelle Development Company. The developer has formed the hotel company, which is Vision Point Hotel. The developer has formed Rochelle Construction Company. So in other words, Mr. Speaker, the developer is one company, it is in the agreement that he funds two other companies. And you know what, Mr. Speaker? He hires another one, so there are a total of four companies, the last one being the management company. The government has agreed to grant to each of the developer, the Rochambeau Construction Company, the hotel company, and the management company concession. Mr. Speaker, I don't understand what is going on, what went on. One man from two other companies hired us another one, that four companies, and the government is undertaking to give concessions to each of those companies. A sad day, Mr. Speaker. Very sad day. And what is, Mr. Speaker? That is cost overrun guarantee. Government agrees to provide cost overrun guarantee. Cut. I like the use of that word. But even the cost overrun guarantee is overrun. Government agrees to provide a cost overrun guarantee cut at $8.5 million US during the phase of the construction. But you know what, Mr. Speaker? As the $8.5 million capped, or capped, or whatever you want to call it, it reached $12.5 million, and the honorable prime minister admitted that. $12.5 million, when he said $12.5 million, it was immediately put to him as US, and he said yes, US. And he went on to admit that on top of that $12.5 million, we have to pay interest. Mr. Speaker, the total cost to taxpayers was in excess of $40 million, Mr. Speaker. $40 million, Mr. Speaker, $12.5 million US is over $31 or $32 million. With interest, over $40 million taxpayers have to foot. What did they get for that? You know what they got? They lose their 25 acres of land, and they have to pay. Mr. Speaker, pigeon point.
Mr. Speaker,
The Arrow Number cannot continue to mislead this house. The government of Constitution never owned 35 acres of land at Pigeon Island. You just said that we lost 35 acres of land. We never owned 35 acres of land. And further, Mr. Speaker, and I'm just clarifying for the House, there were two separate agreements which the court records will show. One is 8.5 and the other is 4 or thereabouts. It's not a single agreement. So the people of St. Lucia never lost land because the government owned 35 acres of land. The Honourable Member is misleading the House in a very crude way.
The agreement said that the company will acquire 35 acres of land. This is what I said to Mr. Speaker. This is exactly what I said. That is what I said in the agreement. I said the agreement as well. I wonder if it was signed, Mr. Speaker. What we do know, Mr. Speaker, is that they are about to foot the bill of over $40 million. Mr. Speaker, we have vision points. All of those things have been done in the name of tourism. What happened to the land of the beach at Pigeon Point, Mr. Speaker? Locals are denied access now. The worst thing, Mr. Speaker, what is being constructed at Pigeon Point is a set of pillars that have been sold at exorbitant prices beyond the reach of a solution.
The member has signed his contribution.
I think to invoke standing order 3210 to allow the honorable member an additional 1 hour to complete his presentation.
The honorable leader of the opposition. One standing order 32, 8 to be suspended to allow the honorable member an additional 1 hour to make his contribution. I now put the question, as many are of that opinion, say aye.
Aye.
As many are of a contrary opinion, say no.
No.
I think we may have to take a poll. I think the ayes have it. Honourable member, please proceed.
Mr. Speaker, I'm a bit amazed that this is the only time the Speaker is a little confused as to whether the ayes had it or not, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker! The Pigeon Point land, Mr. Speaker. Currently, Mr. Speaker, there is construction going on at Pigeon Point. And as I said, Mr. Speaker, the locals no longer have access to the beach in the name of tourism. And to require the developer is using those lands, Mr. Speaker, for the construction of villas being sold at extremely exorbitant prices. That money does not filter to the reasonable solution, Mr. Speaker. So, Mr. Speaker, I believe that there is urgent need, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, there is urgent need, Mr. Speaker, to regulate the state of land to foreigners, Mr. Speaker. There is an urgent need to do so. Mr. Speaker, we are all about growth. Growth. And I only have 2 hours, Mr. Speaker. And I will repeat that I am a solution. I was born here, Mr. Speaker, and I'm ready to buy this. Mr. Speaker, I am a foreigner, Mr. Speaker. I am a solution. Mr. Speaker, every administration prides itself on establishing growth. We always hear about growth. But Mr. Speaker, you know the figures, the percentages of growth can be used to manipulate the minds of people. If there is growth, Mr. Speaker, the standard of living of your people must generally improve. Generally. Mr. Speaker, there are two very important points here. If you borrow $1.5 billion and you pump it into the economy, you will see growth. But you cannot look at growth in total isolation from your national debt. You have to look at the two just opposed to each other. The other thing, Mr. Speaker, there can actually be growth where the majority of people get poorer. And I'll give you an example. Mr. Speaker, there are 5 of us here. If this year, each of us, Mr. Speaker, has $100, and my friend has $9,600. Together, Mr. Speaker, we'll have together $10,000. But he has $9,600. Each of us has $100. So we start with the title of $2,000 a year. The following year, Mr. Speaker, the 4 of us got poorer. Each of us end up with 50, but my friend ends up with 19,800. Together, we'll have $20,000 showing growth of 100% per capita, $2,000. But Mr. Speaker, the majority of us got poorer, whereas one man got extremely rich. So the question is, Mr. Speaker, can you use any growth rates to measure the improvement in the standard of living of the people of your country?
Mr. Speaker, the wealth is in the hands of the few. And I go for it, as we can see, Mr. Speaker, I carry it where there is extreme monopoly. So when you talk about grocery, tell me the people in Cornwall and Banner Hill and Langdo and those places enjoyed some kind of improvement in the standard of living. That is what I want to know. Don't give me a percentage of that was X percent go free. If you have one man who takes everything and the other gets nothing, they get poorer. And yet, physically, growth will be shown. Growth will be shown. Yeah, growth. Who grows? Who grows, Mr. Speaker? One man grows. Mr. Speaker, the only thing the government can admit that grows, Mr. Speaker, is the estimate on capital projects. When I call it growth, they call it overrun. Overrun, Mr. Speaker. We had Rochamel, we had the prisons, we had the Bellet School, we had the Beaufort Soufre Highway. Now you know, Mr. Speaker, that one is a troubling one. The Beaufort Soufre Highway is troubling because my instructions are, Mr. Speaker, that the estimate, the cost was doubled. The cost was doubled, Mr. Speaker. Now, Mr. Speaker, when you have a capital project, you are borrowing money to construct whatever the project is. The lending institution will have to expose to do the evaluation. You as the borrower would have to expose. There will be consensus in terms of the amount of money that the thing may cost. Mr. Speaker, I don't understand. If something that was projected to cost 42 million running to 43, 44, 45, 50 million. But when it does, Mr. Speaker, you need to send an invitation to a man like Wally to sing his renowned rendition, Where the Money Gone. That is what needs to be done because it is your number overrun, Mr. Speaker. You overrun, Mr. Speaker, by twice your amount. This is unbelievable, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, and even the economist has taken a vow of silence, Mr. Speaker, because he knows exactly what I'm talking about. You can't overrun, no problem. You always have overrun. 10%, 50%. But you double? No, no overrun is where the money goes. Mr. Speaker, the Prime Minister admitted that central Castries, the Castries Central, is a matter of semantics, is in a mess. He agreed, Mr. Speaker, that the sidewalks needed a comprehensive rehabilitation and that there was need to enhance the charm, to use his words, the charm and appearance. I love those words, Mr. Prime Minister, of central Castries. He went on to say, we can no longer boast that the waterfront is a wealth is as welcoming to the eyes as it was before. What a fact, I'm very well put. And he also expressed the intention of spending millions of dollars in Castries Central. What we did not hear from the Honorable Prime Minister, Mr. Speaker, was that the state of Castries Central is directly related to the neglect of the solution of the party. Neglect, Mr. Speaker, for which I'm sorry. Sorry for the neglect, Mr. Speaker. The question is, Mr. Speaker, why now? Why is the need felt, Mr. Speaker, to only take care of the people at this point? I don't know. But I'll tell you one thing, the constituents of Castries Central are not stupid. That's why I'm here today. The vast mayor, Mr. Speaker, Mr. Norman John, and his then town clerk, Mr. Lambert Daniel, he left office in 2003. Lambert Nelson, sorry. Nelson. Mr. Speaker, together, they had a very active town council and board and took the task of beautifying the city hall.
the ambassador of growing sidewalks, Ramsar is every person's and senior citizens. This was done, Mr. Speaker, throughout the country's region, without any assistance, financial or otherwise, from the central government. Mr. Irwin John, Mr. Speaker, stolen the help of the French government, and they came to his assistance. The venture was greatly appreciated by the people. As a matter of fact, Mr. Speaker, I wouldn't say missing, I have a letter, because they won't understand, paper for a library, when you say missing, they told me so yesterday, I said it's not missing. I have a letter before me, addressed to the Honorable Minister for Social Transformation, from Mr. Irwin John. It says, dear Minister, this was to inform you that in discussion with the Mayor of La Marte, Pierre Samo, and three members of his technical staff, I discussed the possibility of converting William Peter Boulevard into a promenade and what assistance he would give to his venture. He thought it was an excellent idea and he was prepared to give technical advice and assistance free of cost to the country city council and the government whenever they are prepared to undertake the project. That was in May 2003. We are here 3 years later. Nothing has been done. Mr. Speaker, material which were purchased in pursuit of beautifying Castries City by Mr. Irwin John and Lambert Nelson are now being sold by the current mayor, Mr. Speaker, to selected members of the public. And I refer to the papers, Mr. Speaker, the small books which you can find around the Derek Wallace Square. They have been sold at $300 for one. Mr. Speaker, the market, which the Honourable Prime Minister referred to as the home of the Labour Party, was transformed under the stewardship of Lambert Nelson and Irwin John. It reached such a standard of acceptability, Mr. Speaker, that even the Prime Minister of Barbados had lunch there. The place was transformed into a place of utmost decency without government assistance. Mr. Speaker, the Castries City Council heavily depended on property tax. On property tax. Give me the money, I don't have to be done there. They depended heavily, Mr. Speaker, on property taxes as their main source of revenue. Not even that, because they felt that Mr. Irwin John could fend for himself by making the French government, they took away the property tax from the Castries City Council. The property tax was taken away from the Castries City Council. And Mr. Speaker, now there is an urgent need to beautify Castries Central. Mr. Speaker, I'm sorry. You know, Mr. Speaker, I heard about plans for the police. And let me inform this Honorable House. I am an ex-police officer. And Mr. Speaker, I must lament the deplorable conditions under which our police officers at Central are impelled to work. The officers, Mr. Speaker, have been forced to befriend rats, roaches, and other rodents, which they are in contact with every minute of the 8-hour shift, 8-hour ordeal. Mr. Speaker, the toilet facilities are so deplorable that the prisoners defecate, or use the barrels for those who don't understand, right in the cell, a few feet away from where the policemen actually work, Mr. Speaker. No wonder, not too long ago, all of the policemen stayed outside the police station on Jeremy Street and said they were working right there. Mr. Speaker, we talk about crime, crime, crime. How can the police combat crime when a basic element is transportation and that is lacking? Mr. Speaker, government owns about 1,086 vehicles. 1,086 vehicles, Mr. Speaker. Some of them, persons go home in the evening. I see them of Grover Lake. I see them in Fijian Point. I see them in Orchard. Day and night, Mr. Speaker, driving up and down, and the police do not have vehicles to respond to criminal activities. Mr. Speaker, I believe that the government needs to get its priorities in order. On Tuesday, Mr. Speaker, we heard about a stick out by the firemen. That did not strike by chance, Mr. Speaker. They stayed away after the degree of tolerance, Mr. Speaker, had been totally depleted. And Mr. Speaker, I dare say, these new fire stations have been the answer. They would have had no reason to strike. But it is not, Mr. Speaker. Equipment and development of the human resource, Mr. Speaker, is the key. Just like a new hospital. Even if you have a new hospital, and it is empty like a dance hall, Mr. Speaker, of what sense is it? Yes, it's a new building, but you have absolutely nothing in there. What sense does it make? Mr. Speaker, which one would any one of us prefer? A medium-sized house, very well furnished with every piece of amenity, or a very big house as empty as a dance hall or opera house? I would certainly settle for the former. Mr. Speaker, I want to read two excerpts from the Firemen Association, which was, it was written to the Permanent Secretary. My instructions are, it was not delivered. But it says here, Mr. Speaker, fire service welfare working conditions. Morale is low. Frustration and discontent is elevated among the men and women of the St. Lucia Fire and Emergency Services. Yet, given the inadequate resources, we are forced to perform our duties with. We conceal our shame to please the St. Lucian public. We firefighters currently work a three-shift system which converts into a 56-hour week. By extension, three extra months every year for which we receive no compensation. And it goes on to say, Mr. Speaker, that the men and women of this department are very much disgruntled by this situation and the signs are glaring. We are concerned about the workers' reaction to this condition as their responses are worsening with every passing day. And they even put a little piece of statistic in there, Mr. Speaker. And the statistic is, right, it says, statistics show that the estimated fire losses over the years have risen from $3 million in 2001 to $18 million in 2004, a similar amount paid in retroactive pay to civil servants this year. This situation can be easily improved. This situation can be improved, but will continue to increase if measures to effectively improve the welfare of the men and women of this department are not promptly put in place. So it was not by chance, Mr. Speaker, that the firemen decided to steal. Now, Mr. Speaker, I just want to deal with two pieces of legislation. You hear about the government is a government for the Mali week. Mr. Speaker, there is an act called the Architects Registration Act. It is number 11 of 2005. It was passed, Mr. Speaker, on the 21st of December 2004. But, Mr. Speaker, it is relevant in that it shows a non-caring attitude by the administration. Mr. Speaker, as it is now, Mr. Speaker, any draftsman could draw a plan and send it into the DCA for approval. As long as it meets the requirements as stipulated by the DCA, it will be approved. Somebody in the infinite wisdom, Mr. Speaker, thought it necessary to cut out a whole load of people
who rely on drafting for a living. And so we came up with the Isaacs Registration Act. Mr. Speaker, Section 2 of the Act outlines the requirements which are necessary before you can become a registered Isaac. And I will say, if you are not a registered Isaac, Mr. Speaker, your plan cannot go into place. Mr. Speaker, it says, a person is qualified to be registered as an Isaac where A, he or she has been awarded a degree or the equivalent in architecture, so after Louis Stone provided that. He or she is registered as an architect by a Board Council or Institute in a country other than St. Lucia, and he or she has had not less than 3 years' experience. So in other words, Mr. Speaker, we have to ask at least, but yes, whatever qualifications to ask which can be so formal, it's not enough to be registered as an architect. You have to spend money to go to university. And when you do that, Mr. Speaker, you still do not instill independence upon yourself. You have to seek employment and work for 3 years before you can be registered. Any alternative, Mr. Speaker? Any alternative? Notwithstanding subsection 7, a person who does not possess those qualifications, as well, can be registered if he or she is a fit and proper person to be registered, and he or she has had not less than 15 years practice in architecture. So, Mr. Speaker, and it would be interesting to note, Mr. Speaker, that in 19, the same year that this act was passed, the total number of residential applications in 2004 of 649 plans were submitted to the DCA. 649. Out of that, Mr. Speaker, 95 were what they call standard type design. Those you could buy from the Honorable Minister, I'm sure he's aware of that. Those you could buy from NDC or whatever. So, Mr. Speaker, there was a balance of 554 plans left. Of those 554 plans which had to be drawn, 536 of 96.75% of the plans were drawn by people who currently do not qualify to be registered as architects. 96.75%. Only, Mr. Speaker, 3.25% qualified. You know what that means, Mr. Speaker? It means turning a big film. Those in the north, the big ones, the big wooden ones, they are the ones who qualified, Mr. Speaker. They are the ones who qualified. 96.7%. So if you had 100 men, 97 men are not eligible to be registered. Only 3 men are eligible to be registered. And you know the worst thing, Mr. Speaker? St. Lucia Institute of Architects recommended fee scale. That is the, Mr. Speaker, those things are so hurtful that if this thing is given effect today, we have a state of unemployment immediately. And not only that, Mr. Speaker, there is a recommended fee scale. Mr. Speaker, the average house costs $250,000. The average house, a small house. The small house, $250,000. I need you to listen to the recommended fee scale, Mr. Speaker. The recommended fee scale, this legislation has given effect, and I think it has been passed, Mr. Speaker, it has received the royal assent, and it has to be done. If the minister just has to publish its commencement there in the event, and it becomes law. It becomes law as long as he gives it a commencement day. That is what the law says. I didn't say it. So immediately once he passes it on anyone and he's upset, he says, look, boom. 96% of the persons who rely on that, Mr. Speaker, are out of the breadline. And Mr. Speaker, I was saying, Mr. Speaker, that currently the smallest of houses we ran you $250,000. The Senate, Mr. Speaker, the Speaker recommended fee scale. He recommended fee scale, Mr. Speaker. It's so hopeful that you wonder whether this government cares about matter. Mr. Speaker, the fee scale for a house of that amount, the percentage is 9.7 to 10.5% for the plan. So, Mr. Speaker, a plan of a house that will run you $250,000, which you can sell for $2,200, $3,000, would run you $26,250 if this law is in effect, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the other thing is, the worst thing, Mr. Speaker, that was a new house, but it also deals with renovation to existing buildings, where the percentage is even higher. Mr. Speaker, if you are doing renovations of the same value on an existing house, the cost of the plan would be $39,125, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, a $250,000 house, your $26,000 could put up your columns, build your slab. If this law is passed, Mr. Speaker, you have to pay to the architect. And if it has to, all it has to be given, Mr. Speaker, it's there in black and white. Everybody could see it. All that has to be done, it has to be given a commencement date. Mr. Speaker, just imagine, Mr. Speaker, thank God, I own a four-story building on the corner of Cheeseland and Century Street. The man who did the architecture on that building does not qualify to the plan for our business life in effect. You know, he does not qualify, Mr. Speaker. And you're telling me that is a government that is for him. Which man? Which man are you for? Which man are you for? The plan I used to pay $2,000 for, I have $26,000, and you from me? I feel your friend, which way you feeling? You can't feel my feet. Mr. Speaker, statutory instrument number 16 of 2000, I'll tell you how the government just squeezes everybody. Mr. Speaker, there is nobody. Nobody cares about the ultimate consumer being the reasonable solution. Nobody cares. Mr. Speaker, we know we had a problem with cement. Statutory number 16 of 2000 is something else, Mr. Speaker, cement was cut at a given price. It was cut at a given price. So that a supplier or a vendor of cement was forced to source cement at a very low price so as to make a profit within the cap price. What has this government done, Mr. Speaker? They have removed the cap. They have removed the cap, Mr. Speaker, by statutory instrument number 16 of 2006. Mr. Speaker, it's in black and white, you know, I didn't write it, it's there. Schedule. The act is called, Mr. Speaker, the order, they decided that the price control amendment order number 16 of 2006. Mr. Speaker, schedule, good, cement. Maximum wholesale price, landed cost plus 4.1%. Maximum retail price, wholesale price plus 19%. Mr. Speaker, it is now more profitable for a man, a vendor of cement, to source more expensive cement. He will source more expensive cement because he's guaranteed income and a percentage. If you had a cap on the price, Mr. Speaker, then the man, the supplier of cement, would be forced to get it at $5 because government said I can sell it at $10 maximum. Right now, what they're saying here, Mr. Speaker, whatever you get it at, just add 4.1% of it and sell to the wholesalers. Then the wholesalers, the total returns now, will take that price and add 19% of it. Who do they ask if it affects the marriage? That's who they affect, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, that ought not to be so. Because any supply of semen, Mr. Speaker, 4.1% of, let us say, $50 is more money than 4% of $10. It is more real money. It's the same percentage, but it's more money. Because if they give you 4% of $1 million, Mr. Speaker, and I give you 4% of $10, I have much more money than you. So there is actually an incentive for the supplier to source more expensive cement, because one, his guarantee is returned, and secondly, the percentage is the same, but it's more money in terms of real dollars. So, Mr. Speaker, I cannot understand why they pass that. That piece of legislation is dangerous. It is dangerous, Mr. Speaker. You need to provide a maximum price at which cement will be sold. You need to do that. If you don't do that, you're not protecting the solution. You're not protecting the solution. You're not protecting the man who's valuable house. You're not protecting them. So when the world comes in and a man says, look, I got my cement at $20 CIF. He has his document. He has 4.1%, he sells it for 22. The other person sells at 19% and sells it for 40. The ultimate person affected by this is the reasonable solution. And when this is a consumer, because those big hotels are billions of dollars. But the reasonable solution, the money, they are the ones feeling the pinch of this, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, one thing, Marigo really hit it. Jesse, I know you're listening. I don't know what Marigo did to you. Marigo really hit it, man. Is Marigo not in there? Mr. Speaker, I want to allude to the audit. Report of Director of Audit. You always tell me I know it, sir. I made that book. I know it at my house. I compiled it at my house. The Director of Audit report on accounts of St. Lucia for the financial year ending March 2001. That's the last time. Yeah. And this is released in March 2005. Mr. Speaker, this audit, Mr. Speaker, this audit, Mr. Speaker, demonstrates the inability of the government to take care of the people's money. There is so much wastage in government. It is unbelievable, Mr. Speaker. And Mr. Speaker, I will start on page 23. I will read excerpts for you, Mr. Speaker. I will make it a document of the House. Although I don't even have them, but you're hiding them. If you're hiding them, I don't know. Mr. Speaker, I just want to read excerpts from this audit, which I did not do. I did not sanction. I did not propose. But I have. Good. In comparing levels that under the Prime Minister's office, I'll go down the line. I will get to agriculture, Honorable Minister, in a while. In comparing the power analysis, and to Minister of Communication works too. Yes. In comparing the power analysis for year-end, audit noted a difference of $16,179.95. The payroll analysis reported an amount of $287,981 and the letter 271. The office of the Prime Minister was unable to provide an explanation for the difference. Not me say the auditor said that, not me. Good. It goes on, Mr. Speaker, to say that the point is St. Lucia's money is being wasted. Audit observed that the office incurred expenditure for which no provision was made in the official estimate. Audit saw no evidence that a warrant was issued for expenditure to be incurred under the following account. As a result, the expenditure was unauthorized. It goes on, I'll give you all the total from the Prime Minister's office in a while. only the first three expenditure accounts were created without authority. These accounts were not approved in the estimates, and there were no supplementary estimates or additional provisions authorizing the creation of this account. And it went on to say, based on the fact that the accounts were not approved and no provisions were made, in the official estimate, it means that the office incurred unauthorized expenditure.
Good.
If you want to call it that, well, that's what you'll do. Waste people's money. Waste people's money. Mr. Speaker, another interesting place. Retirement of advances of subsistence. That is well. The government is doing so in the debt. How it says, examination of the office records indicated that some advances of subsistence remain unclear in direct contravention of Staff Order Number 75, 7.5. A list of outstanding advances from the Accountant General Department reported outstanding advances from ministers and officers who are no longer in office and some who have died. So, Mr. Speaker, you can see space that you have. It doesn't mean that.
Okay. Okay, you don't have a chance to answer that. Now,
Mr. Speaker, unauthorized transfer of funds to a bank account recorded as expenditure. I didn't write it. I didn't do the audit. I observed the correspondence from the Permanent Secretary to the Accountant General dated May 22, 2000. 2 June 2000 and 7 August 2000 respectively, requesting the following amount to be transferred to bank account number 10127669 at the Bank of St. Lucia, formerly MCB. 300,000, 565,000, 135,000. It was noted that the bank transfers were charged directly as actual expenditure in the Accountant General account. This is misleading as there was no evidence of invoices to support that expenditure. Oh Lord. Consequently, the transfer of funds to a bank account by the Accountant General was done without authority. $1 million. Mr. Speaker, now, there are lots of overpayments. Lots of overpayments that have been made to officers, lots and lots of overpayments. Audit noted the financial analyst resigned by memo dated October 30th and was still paid by $2,230, and nothing was done in an attempt at recovering the amount. Mr. Speaker, the Ministry of Legal Affairs, over expenditure. It's under that caption, over expenditure, please. Audit noted 33 cases of over expenditure in the accounts, totaling $2,461,108 for the period under review. $2,461,108. The violation, it says, has adverse financial implications for the government. I didn't say it is right there for everyone to see. Mr. Speaker, let me just move quickly to the prisons, Mr. Speaker. When the prison started, the bodily prison, the correctional facility, yes, it's a politically correct term. Okay, good. You have any counselors in there, Mayor? Very well. Mr. Speaker, our examination, when the building was being constructed, our examination revealed that the total expenditure was not accurately recorded in the account. And at year end, 15,118,000 $400 were shown as total expenditure. Whereas audit was able to trace four payments totaling $17,250,000, a difference of $2,131,600. Mr. Speaker, let me go to agriculture, Mr. Speaker. The auditor said, audit observed under the Ministry of Agriculture, that the ministry incurred expenditure in some book accounts in which no provisions were made in the official estimates, and there were no warrants issued for that purpose. As a result, expenditures were unauthorized. The ministry's book account reveals all the expenditure totaling $2,164,428.62. But you know what it says, Mr. Speaker? What is interesting? It says, unauthorized expenditure is a serious matter for which officers can be held liable under the Finance Act. Let me read that again. Unauthorized expenditure is a serious matter for which officers can be held liable under the Act. I'm just wondering, Mr. Speaker, whether that's the same act you're used to invoke Black Panda in jail. I don't know, Mr. Panda, I'm not sure. But, Mr. Speaker, it's a serious matter for which officers can be held liable under the Act. I did the session. Now, Ministry of Communication and Works, that one is very interesting. Mr. Speaker, Ministry of Communication and Works is so very interesting. It is very, very interesting. All you observe, Minister of Communication and Works, that the minister, now though I didn't make it up, it's in the audit. All you observe that the minister, during the period in review, received a monthly traveling allowance of $900. All this makes several attempts for the authority for the payment of the amount as it appeared very unusual. At the time of finalizing the audit, no authority was submitted. Mr. Speaker, I'm not saying it is right. I'm not saying it is wrong. I am reading from an audit report. I read it again, Mr. Speaker. Audit observed that the minister, during the review period, received a monthly travel allowance of $900. Audit made several requests for the authority for the payment of this amount, as it appeared very unusual. At the time of requesting the finalizing the audit, no authority was forthcoming. Mr. Speaker, there is another very, very, very interesting situation under that same ministry. Mr. Speaker, and listen attentively, please, Mr. Speaker. A comparison between the accountant general accounts and the ministry's revenue revealed the following differences. A comparison between what they collected and what the accountant general actually received revealed the following difference. The total difference, Mr. Speaker, and it is under the heads of agency administration, treasury, cash book difference. In other words, what the treasury receives vis-a-vis what the cash book says. Mr. Speaker, for the period under review, in monies collected and monies that go to the treasury, and I'm saying so in interpreting this report, there was a difference of $4,620,021.40. $4,620,021. That is money actually collected after the receipt books of communication routes, but the treasury says they never received. Where is the money gone? Mr. Speaker, that is what is in the audit. It goes on to say, no explanation was given by the responsible personnel for these differences, which are very significant. Mr. Speaker, I did not write this here. I did not write this, Mr. Speaker. A difference of 4 million. No wonder we have to be borrowing money. So many disappeared. Is that why, Mr. Speaker? Treasury is saying they never got the money. They never got it. Communications, I want to say yes, we receive it. But you know what, Mr. Speaker? There is a very interesting thing here, Mr. Speaker. Very, very interesting. Because there's an overpayment which I will allude to in a while. But Mr. Speaker, it is just mismanagement. It is. I observe that payment voucher number 4966751 for $171,000, $171,534 was processed and paid twice. $171,534 was paid twice. I didn't know that I said until that it was a total payment which had not been recovered. I didn't write it. It is there. I did not write it, Mr. Speaker. I did not write it. So, Mr. Speaker, there's another one. Our examination revealed for the financial year 2001, total advance of the project was 2 million. However, only noted that the actual expenses were still more, resulting in excess expenditure again of $150,000. Mr. Speaker, things are serious. They are serious, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, there is a provision under the financial regulations. Number 45, it says, a collector of revenue other than a sub-accountant which receives any duties, tax, licenses, fees, levies, rents, or other public monies, whether or from inside the revenues of government or solution, shall pay a whole of the amounts received daily, either to a bank or to the credit of the consolidated fund. Daily, yet, Mr. Speaker, there were incidents. Money was collected on the 1st of June, kept for 20 days, and deposited on the 20th of June. That amount was $31,292.25. Why is a servant of the government in possession of that kind of money for that and for that? Why does a civil servant Why is a civil servant in possession of that money for that period of time? Mr. Speaker, another one collected on the 19th of June, deposited on the 4th of July, 20,000. The above indicated that sometimes the department kept large sums of money in its possession. And I have a note here, no wonder that 4 million goes missing. Mr. Speaker, we cannot afford to take this lackadaisical approach with people's money, Mr. Speaker. A government is entrusted to ensure that they run the people's business prudently. Prudently, Mr. Speaker. And all this audit has done is show wastage upon wastage upon wastage. Mr. Speaker, I alluded to one situation where money was paid to us, $171,000. There are several instances, several in this audit, Mr. Speaker, where persons coming for the invoice today, coming the same invoice 3 weeks after, and get paid again at the expense of taxpayers. It's in the audit. It is in the audit. You have the audit. You have the audit. So you should tell the auditors don't put it in there. So, Mr. Speaker, what is going on? What kind of thing is that, Mr. Speaker? What kind of thing is that? Mr. Speaker, in addition to that, the logbooks of government vehicles. The logbooks of government vehicles are a total mess. Of the fleet of 1,086 vehicles, if there are 4 the logbooks are up to date, that's a lot. on the Easter then, Mr. Speaker, love is not available. It was good. So there is more proper accounting in terms of spending taxpayers' money. No proper accounting, Mr. Speaker. We pay for the gas. We pay for the tires. We pay for the vehicle as well. But yet, Mr. Speaker, no proper account. Mr. Speaker, and then I am asked what that has to do with the budget. That is an audacious question. Because, Mr. Speaker, when you're entrusted, that is why we are having so many cost overruns. Each person has been paid twice. Each person is engaged in unauthorized expenditure. Then invariably, the money has also been spent on a capital project. Will be overspent because some of it is missing. There is one situation where a man put a capital or whatever. He was spent, I think twice or thrice. There's one person who was spent twice. Seven invoices spent twice. I can't go through the whole audit. But it shows wastage on the part of the administration. And Mr. Speaker, the wastage will stop. It will stop, Mr. Speaker. The landslide has started. But you know what? Taxpayers' money will not continue to go down the drain like this, Mr. Speaker. Millions and millions of dollars, Mr. Speaker. And then we talk about we are good managers. I need to ask of what? Mr. Speaker, with this, I will not oppose for opposing sake, as I indicated. I find myself where my voice is no more than an echo of what would not be reality. Because I don't think my friends on the other side, all of whom have supported the budget, will vote against it. So I will refrain from casting a vote as far as passage of the appropriation bill is concerned. But Mr. Speaker, all I'm asking the managers to do, Mr. Speaker, is to exercise prudence in spending the monies entrusted to them by the people of the nation. Thank you.